This entire season of Retronauts is fully funded by listeners like you thanks to Patreon. If you'd like to find out how you can help and get episodes a week in advance, head on over to patreon.com/retronauts. Thanks and enjoy the show. This week on Retronauts, we take a bite out of Fonzie. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Retronauts. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, for this one. And let's go around the table really quick before I tell you about the topic. See who else is here. So who's to my right?
This is Michael Raparez of Video Game Apocalypse. It's a podcast.
Awesome. It certainly is. It's a good podcast. I love it. Kat.
Kat Bailey, senior editor at US Gamer. It's a website.
It certainly is. Who else is here?
That I work for.
Jeremy Parrish, Fonzie tastes like Brill Cream. It's gross.
Ew. Well, yeah, we're not actually going to take a bite out of Fonzie.
Oh, now you tell me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was just a metaphor. So today's topic is...
only for you.
Listen, Henry Winkler is a national treasure. I won't have any of this.
His work on Children's Hospital is wonderful.
Yeah, and Arrested Development as Barry Peppercorn.
Zuckercorn.
Oh, Zuckercorn.
Peppercorn sounds delicious.
Oh, yeah.
I would take a bite out of Fonzie if he were a peppercorn.
Well, I love that I keep showing up at the end of these recording sessions because you two are so punchy, my God.
Yeah, we're just we're
that's just me now that I'm on cocaine.
Well, it's a US Gamer salary. Yeah. Don't tell anyone. Okay, so let me tell you what we're talking about today. It is Obamacare, free cocaine for everyone.
Death panels.
So the reason I have Michael on this is because I think Video Game Apocalypse is sort of like – there's like a mini Retronauts in almost every episode because you guys do top five lists.
Yes.
And you know a lot about gaming history, I think.
Thank you.
I mean, they call you Wiki Paras because you have like a bottomless capacity for knowledge about video games. Is that correct?
I like to think so,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean that's why you're here today because today like we've been recording a long time. We fly Jeremy out here because we want – to make the most use of our time, you know, when we can to record these episodes. And this is
– We never get punchy when I'm just on Skype.
No. But now we're really punchy. But, but here's the thing. Like I wanted the last episode of this session to be more of a free form thing. I think I am always too dependent on notes. I want to kind of, you know, challenge myself in a way. But I also am tired and I can only write so many notes for a single weekend of recording. So today's episode is going to be about when games or series jump the shark. And I also wanted to say like Michael is here because if you search for him on the internet, the first thing that comes up is a picture of him wearing a Legacy of the Wizard t-shirt. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, Michael.
Oh, yeah. No, I wasn't aware of that. That is number one.
That's awesome that you have a Legacy of the Wizard
flipping off the
t-shirt.
Camera. Yeah, well, there's a story behind that. It was a fan that...
It's that you love Legacy of the Wizard because you have good taste.
Oh, I wish that were it. No, it was just a fan took the sprite because he thought it looked kind of like me and started doing these webcomics called The Adventures of Tiny Michael.
Oh, yeah. So the father, okay.
And so, for my birthday, my wife made me a t-shirt.
I assume the father, not like the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking up how to spell your last name because I always forget. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that popped up is you in that t-shirt. I'm like, oh, it's perfect. Like Michael needs to be here more often because I don't own a Legacy of the Wizard t-shirt.
Somebody finally gave me a copy of that game. I really should go back and play it.
You're not going to beat it.
Yeah, look up a fact. That's
How do you spell your name, Mike?
It's R-E-P-A-R-A-Z.
R-E-P-A-R.
Yeah. And right now Jeremy's looking.
The first name is
I want to see the shirt.
It's M-I-K-E-L.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
So if you're at home, look that up.
I used to know the father's name, but I don't.
So I do want to say today's topic is about when games or series jump the shark. And this comes to us from a contest winner from last season who their prize was to choose the topic of an episode. So this is what Scott Schrader says. He says, jumping the shark. Longtime Simpsons fans know that the debate on which was the last good season is an argument that will, one, never end, and two, always provide an entertaining trip through your favorite episodes and lines. I think we were actually talking about this last night at dinner.
I thought it was pretty obvious.
Yeah. I got this idea listening to the recent Castlevania podcast where I got the impression that you fellas like the old Castlevanias and don't like the new ones, or so somewhere in the middle there the series must have jumped the shark. Maybe pick some longstanding series and have a lively debate? Well, that's what we're doing today, Scott. And like I said, I did want to have a more freeform discussion. So is there any like particular games – I mean I have a bunch of series listed, but I want to know if there's any standout shark-jumping moments for you. And here's how I want to define this. I mean like if a game jumps the shark, it's like it can be boiled down to like a thing in a game or just a game's general attitude or spirit that is so just weird, disruptive, strange, insulting, or offensive that makes it ruin the series for you. But the series can recover. So if games can jump the shark, in this case, they can recover. And plenty of series have jumped the shark and then, you know, years later have come back better than ever.
So jumping the shark as opposed to a slow, depressing decline like Valkyrie Profile.
Exactly, yes.
Got it.
So can anyone
think... That series is only 3 games long. That's not a sad
decline. Yeah,
but
it was still a sad decline anyway.
So does anyone have anything specifically in mind? Like,
I want to say that... thinking about this, I feel like a lot of series, quote, jump the shark because they fail to properly transition into a new generation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the standout example of that is Sonic, which definitely jumped the shark once it transitioned to 3D. And it wasn't immediately obvious that it truly jumped the shark.
And people were like, yeah, big the cat.
Yeah,
that's what
awesome.
I'm all about.
Yeah. Like everybody remembered those that the killer whale, but they forgot that Sonic Adventure actually wasn't that great a game.
Actually, Michael, this could date the podcast, but Michael just reviewed Sonic Boom, and I was mm-hmm. saying to him out in the lobby, like, this could be the most broken game since Sonic Adventure. Like,
it could be.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really buggy. I was fortunate in that I didn't run into a lot of the bugs, and I actually tried the Knuckles jumping bug that everybody's talking about, and it didn't work for me.
The moment that Sonic actually jumped the shark was when Shadow the Hedgehog got his own game. And he had a gun or whatever, and he was dating a human woman. Or was that?
No, that was Sonic. You're conflating two bad things that happened
around
the same
time. Shadow the Hedgehog was definitely the shark jumping moment for that series.
Sonic 2006 did not redeem anything. I think it did
the opposite of redeeming.
Yeah.
For me personally, I actually feel like Sonic jumped the shark with Sonic 3. I know people love that game, but like I just really hate playing it. I love Sonic and Sonic 2. I think they're really, really great games. And Sonic 3 to me is just the opposite of fun. It just has all these unnecessary mechanics that complicate things and I don't know. It really, like, when I've played the game, it's really offended me.
I might have to stick with
but
Adventure.
But I realize I'm kind of the...
I don't know if it jumped the shark with 3, but I never liked 3 either. Hmm. Just because, first of all, I hated the soundtrack. It's not very good.
I will disagree.
Why don't you like
you
Michael Jackson?
Vehemently.
Well, okay, but it is
Michael
not
Jackson,
nearly as...
Michael Jackson, a national treasure on the level of Henry Winkler, put that music together.
It's not nearly as catchy as Sonic 2, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And the second... I just hate playing through the second world. I don't remember what it was called, but there's a lot of water, if I recall correctly. Don't
Sonic
like it.
And water.
Hydrocity, Hydrocity Zone, I think it was.
Something like that.
Hydrocephalus.
I finished Sonic 1 and 2, could never get around to finish 3, just did not like it.
To me, like, I mean, Sonic Jumping the Shark is like a biannual event, kind of. Like, every year there's a bigger shark and a bigger jump.
Like, there's so many different species of shark. There's great white, there's tiger, like, hammerhead. You know, every year Sonic finds a different species of shark.
We're going to run out of sharks someday.
Sonic Rush on the DS was actually pretty good, though.
Yeah, and then Sonic Rush Adventure wasn't.
It had its moments. It had its moments.
I think the biggest Sonic shark jumping moment was Sonic Adventure because as soon as we were done...
It's more almost an orca jumping moment.
Oh, yeah.
The orca's jumping you.
Wow, it's like a reverse shark jumping. Weird. But I think that like... As soon as we were done being impressed by how good it looked at the time, like because that game looked better than anything had ever looked before, period. I mean, before we saw PS2 games, you know, that was like...
Oh, Soul Calibur, man.
Soul Calibur didn't come out until the following year, didn't it?
No, Soul Calibur was a launch game for Dreamcast.
Okay, weird. Okay. Well, I mean, it was a Dreamcast game and we were still bowled over by that. But by the time that wore off...
Those looked amazing.
Yeah, they did look good.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
Sonic, I will admit it will never work in 3D, but that game was like, we are going to do as many different things as possible. So like every character had a different kind of game type associated with them. You had a race with Tails. You had Amy who like was just like a weird like melee attack based stages kind of thing. And there were like racing stages where you were racing in a car and there was fishing stages and there was like a pinball. Like it was all over the place. They did not bear down on what made Sonic like
who
he is.
So you got to play as that robot.
Oh, that was Sonic Adventure 2, I think.
Was it?
Yeah. So, you know, I recently put together a Sega Saturn retrospective, which isn't quite the same thing. We're talking about Dreamcast. But I think it was Brandon Sheffield from formerly of Gamasutra, now with Necrosofty, made the point that Sega games have always been about just throwing in lots of neat little details, just little superfluous things that you don't necessarily have to see or appreciate, but they're there because Sega loves you and wants you to have the richest game experience possible. I feel the mistake that Sonic Adventure made was to throw in all these details and extras and things and then make them compulsory. Like, you couldn't avoid fishing with Big the Cat. You had to do that.
Yeah.
Like, if that had been, you know, a little side adventure that you could do, kind of like the Chao, okay.
I always say
raising them, like, that was superfluous. That was extra. That was just a fun little thing you could do. But, you know, all these other characters, their side quests, like, that was forced on you and distracted from the part that people really wanted, which was to got to run fast with Sonic.
Right. And then there was like an open world you had to suffer through to like the hub stages to find like keys to actually unlock the stages you didn't want to play in the first place.
So I think the problem was that Sega looked at too much at what everyone else was doing with the 3D platformer at that point and saying, oh, it has to be this bloated, stretched out experience. And it really took away from the meaty essence of Sonic. And there is a good game there, and then it's just, you know, like there's a layer cake of crap on top.
Yeah, it's like a shit casserole you're working with.
We look back on Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2 kind of unkindly, but my recollection was that the tide really turned against the series with Sonic Heroes. And that was the first time I remember everybody complaining about all the friends.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that as being like people were praising it as a step in the right direction. Like, this isn't great, but at least it's better than Sonic Adventure 1 and 2.
I don't remember that. I remember people saying like, why do I have to play as Sonic's stupid friends? I don't want to do that.
I don't think we heard a definitive opinion from Michael on this. Do you have like any strong Sonic feelings at all about it? I'm not sure how.
Not particularly. I mean, I was a Nintendo kid for most of my childhood and adolescence.
What did your friend who traded his Sega Genesis for his Super Nintendo for a Sega Genesis and CD think of it all?
I don't know. I kind of lost touch with him after high school. But I was in college when the Dreamcast came out. And I think Sonic Adventure might have been the first Sonic game I actually bought. So I wasn't coming at it from a situation of any sort of nostalgia or an idea of what a Sonic game should be. So I actually enjoyed it when it was out. I think I'm probably the only person working in the industry who did. And I feel sort of ashamed to admit it.
That you enjoyed Sonic Adventure?
Yeah.
I mean, oh, a lot of people did.
I did at the time, yeah. Like going back.
I remember like going to a game store I went to college in Olympia, and there was this little place called Game Bros, and they had this gigantic TV that took up an entire wall, and they would just play the intro demo from Sonic the Hedgehog or Sonic Adventure over and over again, and just like the giant water monster and like the Alice in Chainsy music.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, this is going to be so cool. It's 1999. There's still time for clacks.
Yeah, get your tribal tattoo immediately.
Thank you for understanding that reference.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
This is the only place where that will happen, the only room.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Congratulations. You found home.
I'm so happy.
So, yeah, I mean, Sonic the Hedgehog, I think, like, every four games there will be a good game. I like Sonic Generations, but then there's been two or three bad games since then, I'm pretty sure.
Was Sonic Colors any good?
I heard that was good too.
What I played of the game at E3 last year, which was like the one level that apparently totally ripped off Super Mario 3D Land, that was great. It was a total Mario ripoff.
Sonic World on the DS? Really good.
Sonic World?
Or Sonic Colors.
Oh, Colors,
Sonic
Colors
on the DS was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they get it right occasionally.
I guess we can move on from Sonic. Is there anything like any like notable like infamous shark jumping moments you can think of? Like I can think of a few
in Sonic.
I
was going to say, you know, for Sonic, really, the jumping the shark moment was when they changed the soundtrack to Sega or Sonic CD. How dare they?
Yeah.
How dare they?
Well, I mean, the obvious shark jumping moment was when Shadow the Hedgehog showed up with his gun and everything.
Yeah.
And it was darker and edgier, and everybody was like, oh, my God.
That could have been definitive. I don't know if they've written him out of the series, but I don't recall seeing him since
He's
that game.
In Smash Brothers as an assist trophy.
Oh, great.
He's still around.
Does Pit make fun of him?
No.
He should.
He should, though, yeah.
I still regret, like, I went to E3 the year that they were showing off Shadow the Hedgehog, and, like, they had a huge statue of him at the Sega booth. He was, like, pointing a gun, like, at a 45-degree angle at the ground. And I still regret that I didn't get a photo of myself, like, kneeling in front of it with head bowed like he's going to execute me.
Yeah. That's what he did to our spirits anyways. Yeah. So yeah, can we just move away from Sonic and just think of anything else notable? I'm just
for me, Mega Man kind of jumped the shark after 3 because 3 had that big ending where like you've been introduced to Proto Man and you defeat Dr. Wily and suddenly the fortress starts crumbling. Dr. Wily is crushed under rubble. And Mega Man is too, but he's rescued because he's a robot. And so I'm like, oh, okay, this whole Dr. Wily story arc is over. I was actually kind of invested in that. And then like 4 comes out and they introduce Dr. Cossack. And spoiler alert, he's really just being manipulated by Dr. Wily, who's back and like, okay, now it's a Saturday morning cartoon.
Dr. Wily was shown to survive at the end of Mega Man 3.
Was he?
In the ending, if you look in the very final screen, there's Wily's capsule, a tiny like – it's like 4 pixels, but it's floating. So it's they gave away. Themselves an out. It's like the Genesis torpedo.
Oh, right. Okay.
My God. Yeah.
Weren't you saying, Jeremy, though, that you feel like Mega Man was designed to be a trilogy? Or like at least that's what it feels like in terms of the story they're trying to tell?
Yeah, it definitely works as a trilogy. And I agree that the series kind of lost its direction. Yeah. But Mega Man X was great.
Yeah, until Mega Man X, like,
and then
4,
Mega Man
5,
Legends was great. So like,
just sort of downhill.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah. 4 was actually my first Mega Man, and I really enjoyed it at the time. So
it was a fine game. Yeah. It just wasn't as good as the previous 3.
No.
Yeah.
You could argue that introducing the Mega Buster was
a
shark
jumping the real
moment.
The real problem with 4 was the Mega Buster. Yeah. Like, the charge shot just broke the concept of the series.
It made it so much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they got rid of – I mean, it's not in Mega Man 9 and 10, right? There's no Charge Buster in those games. Yeah.
But that's what happens when you have feature creep. Like, they're like, oh, we need something to sell the game. You can slide and shoot a Mega Buster, I guess.
I feel like Mega Man's Mega Buster is like – now that you – is the – like jumping in Call of Duty. It's like, we had to add something. Now you can jump.
Well, slide was in 3 and it was fine.
Right.
Like, it was an interesting mechanic. Yeah. It was, you know, thoughtfully introduced to the level design. So it fit. But, yeah, the Mega Buster – just made the whole concept of collecting enemy weapons completely moot. It also overrode some of the music because of the limitations in NES sound channels. Mm. So it made the game better or worse in every possible way.
Yeah. Well, one series I wanted to talk about is Tomb Raider. I can't think of a series that's been rebooted more often, maybe like Alone in the Dark or Prince of Persia. And for me, I think Tomb Raider jumped the shark originally, initially. It would jump – it's like a Sonic kind of thing where there are multiple shark jumps. But like I think Tomb Raider 3 was the moment we realized annualization was terrible for games. I feel like that was the moment the press zeroed in on that. Like I remember there was a review of Tomb Raider 3. It could have been Game Players. I forget what it was. But what they did was they took their review for Tomb Raider 2 and they just crossed out the irrelevant parts and like wrote in new things. And that was such a smart-ass way to let like the publisher know like we will not accept this. And I feel like by Tomb Raider 2 they had used all of their ideas that they wanted in that for that system for that what they could do with the PlayStation.
The problem with Tomb Raider was that – my apologies, Jeremy. But the problem with Tomb Raider was that they kept using the same engine for years and years and years and never changed, going all the way into like the PS2 if I recall correctly.
It was a weirdly stingy approach to game design. Like core design was just a small team. And they didn't really staff up, even though those games were selling millions and millions of copies. They were raking in so much money. But Eidos or Core, whoever was in charge of calling the shots there, refused to say, you know, let's rethink this whole thing and give it the necessary upgrade. Let's bring in a bigger staff. And when they finally did that on PS2, it was just a mess. Yeah, Tomb Raider 3, like I played the first two and really liked them. But Tomb Raider 3, I couldn't get into. Like, it really didn't do anything for me. But honestly, for me, the series kind of started to lose its sense of direction in the second game when you start fighting so many human enemies.
That's true, yeah.
Like, it was terrible. Yeah. Like, the series, the engine just was not designed for that. And I remember in the inverted sunken ship getting up on top of some crates, and there was a dude with, like, a wrench walking down below me, but he couldn't climb up and he didn't have a ranged weapon. So I was just standing there shooting him while he walked in circles. And I thought, you know, this is not good. I hope they make this better next time. And they didn't.
I think they made 4 games with that engine.
Yeah, like, they made Chronicles.
Oh, Chronicles.
Which Tomb Raider Revelations and Chronicles.
Hmm.
Oh, wait, which one was the
Revelations was
one?
4, where she seemingly died at the end.
Right, yeah.
Chronicles was 5, where it was like telling the story of Lara's life. Uh-huh. And then at the end, it's like,
wow, I thought
she's
there were
still
only
alive.
4.
Nope.
Was it Underworld that came out in 2008? Was that the name of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one wasn't very good either.
I heard it was good, actually.
Was it? Nothing.
That's
it got really, pretty middling
I didn't play
reviews.
It. I didn't play it.
But it got that was kind of the final nail in the coffin of that variant of Tomb Raider. And then they rebooted it.
Legend was kind of a reboot. It was like a soft reboot. They sort of ignored all the stuff that had come before and started to tell a new story that Underworld continued.
But it was the same character. But yeah, Underworld, I remember, caught a lot of flack for not having a real ending. Like, they released the ending as DLC. Mm. And that was kind of the start of, like, okay, you guys cannot get away with this crap. Like, yeah, just in for DLC in general across the industry.
I'm trying to think of the PS2 Tomb Raider, Angel of Darkness. Was mm-hmm. that
– I mean
– was this Lara Croft, Angel of Darkness, or was it Tomb Raider?
Raider. Okay, yeah. But yeah, so Angel of Darkness, it wasn't a jump the shark moment because the series was already in the air over the shark. What that basically did was, like, it was like a double jump.
Okay.
And it just made, you know, even higher over the shark. And then Tomb Raider Legend came along later, like 3 years later, and was really good.
That was a great game, yeah.
And yeah, Underworld just didn't really do anything different or new. I think that was the biggest problem. It was like a fine game, competent, but it needed to be something more because games had evolved.
And if I recall, well, like the Uncharted had come out the year before, and
I think that's right.
And Uncharted 2 came out the next year after that, I think 2009. And after that, it was just like, yep, Nathan Drake has officially taken over for Tomb Raider.
Yeah, it just felt archaic.
I mean, I know we're not all going to agree with this, but I feel like only with 2013's Tomb Raider has the series gained its reputation back as, like, a good video game. Like, I feel like, I don't know.
They certainly want us to believe that.
I don't really like the game, but I think that it now has its reputation back, you know, as a non, like, crappy annualized. I mean, you can disagree if it's a good game or not. I don't like it personally, but I think
does it have its reputation back? I don't know.
I think it does. I think it does.
To some degree.
Yeah.
I feel like I feel like it's the publisher telling me, yep, we're back. We're a AAA game now. We're officially, like, we're in the good graces of everybody. Look how much everybody loves us. But I haven't heard anybody really say, I love Tomb Raider.
Ask video game critics. I personally don't trust video game critics, but they all love it.
Okay. I
say that facetiously, people. I am a video game critic, just in case you can't take a joke. So can we think of anything? I mean, like, I have a whole list of series. I just don't want to name them.
I'm wondering, does anyone have any fond recollections of Tony Hawk? Like, did any of you play that series?
I never got into it, but I'm wondering, like, I take it you're a fan, Michael.
I was a fan.
Yeah.
I was a fan up until American Wasteland, which coincidentally I found out while looking up series for this. That actually has a moment where you literally jump a shark that is named Fonzie.
Okay.
But for me, the jumping the shark happened in the first 15 minutes of that game where I think you get off a bus and, like, somebody shows you a trick and it's like some impossible thing where they, like, just go up a ramp and then, like, hang in midair and do, like, three spins while hovering and then come back down. Like, okay, this has gotten ridiculous now. And then, like, you learn – they added parkour to that game. And I think somebody at the design studio just thought, like, well, parkour is French, right? Let's make the parkour instructor a French stereotype with a beret and a mustache.
Did he have like a grocery bag with a baguette sticking out of it or something?
That would have completed the image.
Yeah.
Or maybe like a little neckerchief. And yeah, but no, it's just a –
as long as we're talking about sports games, Madden NFL 06 is generally regarded as a major shark jumping moment for that series. Because
was that the one they almost didn't
because
release?
Because of QB vision?
No. That was, I think, Madden 95 even. Maybe,
okay.
Where they completely changed the studio. That was when Tiburon took over the series, if I recall correctly. Or was it maybe 98? Whatever. It was the PlayStation.
I think it was 98.
Yeah. But 05 or 06 was kind of a funny one because that was the year where Penny Arcade coined the term bullshot because EA put out this big trailer. It's like, look at this game. Look how amazing it's going to look. And everybody's like, well, that's pre-rendered footage. And I have a number of friends who worked on that game. And they said, oh, yeah, by the time E3 came around, we hadn't even gotten the thing up and running. Like, we had a basic pre-rendered character that we put up there and said, this is maybe what the game's going to look like eventually. And that game was also kind of really infamous for having the QB vision cone, in which you had a really good quarterback, you could see the entirety of the field. But if you had a bad quarterback, you could only see this tiny little cone.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I just said a Metal Gear Solid NPC guard as my quarterback.
So this is a football game.
Exactly. You are more right than you know.
But so this is a football game with Fog of War.
Exactly, yes.
That's weird.
So that was maybe the most derided new feature from a Madden game ever, and lo and behold, it was gone the very next year. So Madden never really recovered that generation. It was pretty bad all the way through 13, and even now with Madden 15, a lot of people say, especially me, it's not up to the level of an NBA 2K or a FIFA. It's just everybody likes to say, well, Visual Concepts did it right with NFL 2K5. Madden sucks, et cetera, et cetera. And Madden 06 was the beginning of that. Hmm. Sports.
If I can get really modern for a second.
Oh, go for it.
Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
For me, that it peaked at the end of Brotherhood, which was also coincidentally, I think, the last really inarguably good game in that series.
I don't think
so
anyone
the
will
problem,
disagree.
Oh. Are you gonna cite the problem as the opening missions of Revelations? The cart chase.
I wasn't even thinking about that. No, for me, it's that. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't finished Brotherhood. Lucy Stillman, Kristen Bell's character, gets stabbed, and it's this really like, what the hell just happened? Moment, like jaw dropping, and it just smashes to black. It's a huge cliffhanger, and it's a cliffhanger that was never really of course, like. That was when people started complaining, like, oh, it's an annual franchise. Like, I don't care. I can only wait a year to find out what happens here. I'm really invested in this. And then Revelations came out, and they just kind of like, yeah, she died.
Yeah, Kristen Bell didn't really want to
– She was a Templar spy.
Pay.
Yeah.
She's too expensive.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah exactly.
Yeah.
And so that was – like, Revelations was a huge step down, I thought, from Brotherhood. And then 3 was bugged all to hell, and then – 4 came out and was wonderful, and then we've got this year's 2 releases. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been hit or miss since Brotherhood.
I'm there with you. I mean, the series started rough but got better and then got worse. So it definitely was bell curve.
I got something I want Jeremy to talk about.
Okay. But first let me also get kind of modern. I'm going to say Grand Theft Auto 4.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you completely, okay. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, like the early games I wasn't super into, but GTA 3 was a revelation, and Vice City was even better because not only were you doing more of the same stuff, but it was better structured and that soundtrack. And San Andreas was just enormous, and it was like an RPG. It was like, modern-day gangster life Morrowind. It was crazy. It was such a rich game. And then 4, like, it took away everything that I liked.
Yeah,
there
I
was
feel
no,
like
the. Oh, go ahead.
4 was this monumental technical achievement that had almost no soul. Like, they were trying to tell a very serious story, and there wasn't a lot of fun to it. Like, everything was super serious, everything was drab, there were no planes. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is not – okay, there are no spoilers here. But when you finish the game, that fact is hammered home even more because there's nothing to do. No one wants to talk to you or hang out with you. Just like when you
finish
the game –
Sounds like a relief though after all the people like calling you every 5 minutes.
That
was
Nico,
awful.
It's your cousin.
Yeah.
Roman Balak.
In terms of how it played, I know they were like –
Go play pool with little Jacob and he'll give you a discount if you get that meter high up enough.
Yeah.
Ugh, terrible.
I hated that. And like actually playing the game was not fun because they were touting their new physics engine, whatever it was called. Like what was it called? Like Rage or like
– I think it was Rage.
Rage, yeah.
Or Euphoria or – something.
But like Grand Theft Auto never had realistic physics, but this time it felt like Nico was like just a ragdoll filled with ball bearings. Like you were just steering around, especially when he was drunk. I mean, of course when he was drunk, but just controlling him just felt not like it wasn't fun. You know.
Yeah, I mean the thing that really drove it home for me, aside from all the other nuisances, was just the fact that the city was laid out so badly. Like there was no initiative or no incentive to explore and go off the beaten path. The highway system, the arterial system that connected the city, like you always just took the same roads to get where you were going. Like that's terrible world design. Like the other Grand Theft Autos didn't have that. I think having that freeway system really undermined the game because it took you away from the sort of niche, you know, neighborhood sort of hidden destinations, and you were always just driving around the main arteries.
You're
and
not really discovering.
I didn't feel like a part of the city. I felt like I was just passing through, and that was something that the previous Grand Theft Autos hadn't done. Crackdown managed to use a very similar highway system really effectively. Like, it was great and easy to get around the city because of the highway system, mm-hmm. whereas GTA 4, it just felt like it was always railroading you to where you needed to go.
Do you think that was because GTA 4 was just a very scripted game and they wanted to make sure they knew which route you were taking so they would know how much time there would be, so they know how much dialogue they can squeeze in for missions and things like that?
I don't know.
That's what it feels like to me.
It was just it really missed the mark. And I didn't enjoy the missions, and I didn't enjoy being outside of missions because I couldn't just wander around without someone nagging me. It really sucked the fun out of the series.
I feel like there were a couple positives that came out of that in the long run. I mean, I think with the DLC after you had Lost and Damned, which was somehow even more depressing, Ballad of Gay Tony, which was like them shrugging and saying, okay, fine, you can have fun again. And I think their insistence on telling a very down-to-earth story kind of gave Saints Row its direction. And that it's like, okay, we can be the antithesis to that. We can be the really fun Grand Theft Auto game that everybody wants.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, it's like the story is kind of irrelevant. You can pay attention to it if you want. But what is up front is the gameplay. Like, here are a ton of fun activities you can do in many different ways at any time you want. You're not constrained to, like, you know, whose missions you're doing at any time. It's just like a weird, fun world, which is what Grand Theft Auto used to be about, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before the Housers were like, we're going to make our own Godfather. Essentially what they're doing,
insane
right?
Insane geniuses.
We love Scarface.
It should have won an Oscar for Best Picture.
To be fair, I love Bully. I want another Bully. We might get another Bully,
yes.
Hopefully. So I do want to ask Jeremy about Metroid.
Okay.
Metroid Other M.
Actually, I would say the jump the shark moment for Metroid was Metroid Prime 2.
Really? For you personally, or just do you think as a series?
I think Metroid Prime was a perfect distillation of Super Metroid into a 3D first-person shooter space. Metroid Prime 2 got overly complicated, had all these weird mechanics, kind of badly designed bosses. It was just too fussy. It kind of reminds me of Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance, where there's like two parallel worlds that are integrated with each other.
Yeah.
And instead of making things more interesting or immersive, it just makes it seem more fractured and difficult to get around.
Well, in Metroid Prime 2, if I remember correctly, there is a dark world and a light world, which are practically identical, except that when you're in the dark world, your health constantly goes down, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. You have to stand in little pools of light. It's kind of like Sonic the Hedgehog, where you stand in, you know, the bubbles underwater.
Boop, boop. Yeah. Yeah, so it was incredibly confusing, and then you had the extra anxiety of always losing your health when you're in this world. So
yeah, and I feel like they never got their mojo back for the Prime series. Like, Prime 2 was okay.
I liked
Prime 3 was okay, but it was just really kind of suffocating and contrived.
True. I mean, I think people give Prime 3 I don't know. People don't give it enough respect, but I think coming off of Prime 2, I enjoyed it a lot, having suffered through Prime 2.
Yeah, I'm going to say there hasn't been a Metroid game that I've really loved since Zero Mission, which came out before Prime 2.
Yeah.
Everything since then has just been kind of like,
But I mean, I know for – is there a reason you didn't review Other M? I mean, we can all say that this is the definitive, like, there's no way they're going to recover.
I thought Other M was a good game and terrible at being Metroid. I didn't review it just because I didn't review it. I mean, there was no
I wasn't
message
sure.
There
like, I feel like you were the Metroid guy, so I just was like, why isn't Jeremy reviewing this?
You know, sometimes it's good to mix things up.
Yeah.
Like, everyone expects, oh, Jeremy's going to review Metroid. So I was happy to let Justin review it. And especially once I saw his review, I was like, oh, okay, well, that really sucks. So glad I didn't review it. I enjoyed it for a while. I wrote a blog to the, you know, to sort of defend the game mechanics, but I couldn't be arsed to finish the game. The story was just stupid.
Yeah.
Mainly it was the story that turned me off.
Yep.
That and the stupid pixel hunt scenes. God, those were dumb.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those.
Like, I literally stood there for 5 minutes trying to figure out what I was supposed to do. I was pointing at everything on the screen, and then somehow I found the right thing and moved along. Terrible.
I did think it was strange that Team Ninja apparently came out a while ago and said, like, yeah, everybody's blaming us for the anti-feminist take on Samus, but that all came from Nintendo.
Yeah, well, Yoshio Sakamoto?
Yeah, he wrote the story for that.
Yeah, it is strange how, like, people would point the finger at Team Ninja, but a lot of it is like, no, this is his vision for the series. This is what he wanted. Like, and I don't know if his hands were tied in any way or Nintendo was like, we need to make a mature, quote-unquote, game for the Wii, but, you know, it's strange.
You know, there are two games that I can think of from kind of the 16-bit era, maybe the 8-bit era, that really jumped the shark. One was Mortal Kombat, as specifically when Mortal Kombat got into the kind of the N64/PlayStation era and started making Mortal Kombat Adventures,
yeah,
starring like Sub-Zero. Ugh.
I kind of stopped after 3.
Yeah. But
Although Shaolin Monks was actually pretty good. I don't know if you ever played that.
I never thought Mortal Kombat was that great, but yeah, it was definitely a huge game.
I would say it jumped the shark before that. I would say it jumped the shark with 3, where it added the run button and just introduced a ton of ridiculous power swap characters.
3 was still recognizably Mortal Kombat. And Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 came out, and most people seemed to really like that. But then they started making the spin-offs for the N64, and then Mortal mm-hmm. Kombat 4 came out, yeah, and it was in 3D, and it was pretty bad.
I'm kind of on Michael's side, where I feel like Mortal Kombat 3 was self-parody, where it's like there's 18 different ninja palette swaps, and then there's like Beybellities and Animalities.
Mortal Kombat was always self-parody.
But they brought it really far with 3, I think.
Mm. Well, I think they were
planted the seeds in 2.
They were exhausting the concept by 3, but the Sub-Zero Adventures and all that stuff was pretty much the shark jumping moment. And then it actually
Mortal Kombat
came back.
Mythologies.
It actually sort of came back with Mortal Kombat Deadly Alliance on the PS2, because they had an actual kind of good 3D engine.
That was, I think, the first reboot.
It brought it back to not as bad. Mm-hmm. And then there were like 3 of those. And then finally they rebooted it for real, and now people like it again, I guess.
Some people like it.
The other one that jumps out at me is Contra, which did not transition to 3D well at all. No. And I think it was a Contra Legacy of War for the Sega Saturn.
That was the one by Appaloosa.
What did they make? They made Echo the Dolphin.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They were Novotrade or whatever.
Yeah, didn't they also make Colibri, the amazing hummingbird shooter?
Colibri, and they made Jaws Unleashed.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
I think that was their final game. That was the one that killed them.
It's a good one to go out on.
Yeah, I suppose.
I think it's fair to say that that was pretty much a shark jumping moment for Contra, and it never really recovered after that. I mean, we got Contra 4, but it seems like Contra fans are up and down on that game.
I think it's like the Silent Hill effect, where it is not made by Japanese people, so automatically a certain contingent of the fan base won't like it, even if it is good.
Ah, yes, Silent Hill, another game that maybe arguably jumped the shark.
Speaking of which, I think as much as I like the ideas behind it, I think Silent Hill 4 is the shark jumping moment. It would get much worse, but it was like a fundamentally unfun game. And Silent Hill games are not supposed to be like fun. Like, wee, I'm having fun in this horrible nightmare world that's about like sexual psychology and things like that.
Well, they're meant to be compelling.
What's four
that?
Was
they're
originally
meant to be compelling, at least.
4 was originally not a Silent Hill game, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think it was just an independent idea called like The Room, or not the Tommy Wiseau Room, thank God, but The Room. And I'm sure Konami was like, we can make this sell with the Silent Hill name, so let's throw some.
They shopped it as a Die Hard script first, and that didn't work. So
I think the one thing that connects The Room to Silent Hill is you read a newspaper article in Silent Hill 2 that mentions the name of a serial killer who doesn't come up again in the game. So they take that character from a note that you read and make him the central villain of Silent Hill 4, The Room. That is the one connection I'm pretty sure it is. And it's a fun game to watch someone play through. I watched a Let's Play of it, but watching that Let's Play of it, I was like, I will never play this. It looks so unfun because half of the game is fine. There are some weird things like the monster sound effects. It sounds like the monsters are farting at you in some parts.
I mean, that's pretty harrowing.
I guess so. I mean, I wouldn't want things farting at me in a dark alley. But
you had the subway hobo ghosts that would just follow you constantly.
Yeah. Can you talk more about the ghosts, Michael? I don't know if you remember the central mechanic to them.
I don't. I remember they were impossible to kill.
You could kill them with like a limited supply of items.
Oh, okay.
But if you wasted one of those items, you wouldn't know if you'd need it in another place. It's kind of like the zombies in Resident Evil remake for the GameCube, but much worse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But the thing about that
like
game –
the Crimson Head ones that come
back? Yeah, that's the one. Okay. But the thing about that game is half the game, fine, it's okay. There's some cool ideas like the first-person mode where you're exploring your haunted apartment and being scared by things is really cool. That's one of the coolest things about the game, I think. And I think it would later inspire things like Amnesia maybe. But the thing about the game is halfway through it becomes an escort mission where you play through the first half of the game again with an escort character. And nobody likes escort missions, and it feels like an incredible amount of padding. Like it feels cynically engineered to make the game longer. And that is why fundamentally, it is a pretty crappy game. Like I said, it's fun to watch. I don't know. Does anyone have any Silent Hill opinions? I seem to have the strongest Silent Hill opinions.
No, I mean, I'm kind of an outside observer on the series, but everything that I've seen and heard and learned makes me say yeah. Silent Hill 4.
Yeah.
It seems like people just – like everybody goes back to Silent Hill 2 as like kind of the high point of the series. Mm-hmm.
It is for sure, yeah.
It started to decline after that.
Three wasn't as good, but I mean it was still pretty fun.
Yeah.
And then, 4 – and I think it's – it's produced a lot of real stinkers since then. Like Konami's really let the brand be diluted with what was that Vita game that was basically
Book of Memories. It was a roguelike.
It's a teenage dungeon crawler for four players. And like this isn't Silent Hill at all. But then like it produced things like Downpour, which I actually enjoyed Downpour.
I heard that wasn't bad, but I heard like Homecoming was especially terrible. I enjoyed Shattered Memories for the Wii. I thought that was a cool use of the Wii.
Oh yeah, that was
the
fun.
Wii remote. The chase scenes, I could take them or leave them, but I liked it as they made it into an adventure game, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, it was not a typical survival horror. It was not a combat game.
Yeah. And the ending was a huge surprise for anyone who
We shouldn't spoil that. Because
no, we shouldn't.
I would say, I mean, God, this is not a game recommendation podcast, but you could probably find that game for like $8. If you have a Wii U, you can play it on your Wii U.
Or a PS2.
Oh, a PS2,
or
yeah.
Or a PS3.
I forgot it was on like all that stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Actually, didn't it come to Vita also?
It came to PSP.
PSP.
Yeah, so you could probably get it.
I heard it was
Vita.
Really terrible on PSP, so.
Probably, yeah.
You want to play it with a Wiimote because there's all kinds of fun little Wiimote style challenges.
You have to like waggle to run away from the monsters or something?
I don't think so.
I forget what that is. But, I mean, like a lot of the puzzles are like you're flipping switches by turning the Wii U, things like that.
Yeah,
it's not the craziest thing, but no one ever used the Wii U controller that well. So
I feel like if you look back, a lot of our favorite game series have jumped the shark at some moment. It's kind of actually the rare game series that sort of hasn't. But I'm like thinking about like the common denominator about what makes these games jump the shark. Why do they jump the shark? And it feels like most of it boils down to the original creator moves on, i.e. like Suikoden.
Or Mega Man.
Or Mega Man. Mm-hmm. They are trying to transition to a new generation and say they're going from 2D to 3D, i.e. Contra and that sort of thing.
Sonic.
Or they just have a really terrible new idea or new direction for the series, like Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah. Well, you can continue in one second, but I think another one is like they don't have any new ideas and they're just doing the same thing over and over again. But did you want to talk about Valkyria Chronicles? You should.
It's so depressing because Valkyria Chronicles, the original, was really good. And then Valkyria Chronicles 2 was announced and I was like, all right, this is going to be great. But Valkyria Chronicles 2 was announced for the PSP and everybody's like, well, okay, it's going to be – I'm kind of skeptical of this. And then they said, and by the way, it's going to be set in a – the equivalent of an army high school.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you just look at the concept art, all you need to know about it, it's archetypes from Japanese high school anime comedy.
Ugh.
And, you know, I kind of like the fact that they were experimenting with it a bit and playing around with like they were playing up the supporting cast. They introduced multiplayer. But the fact of the matter is the PSP was not a good platform for that series.
No.
It was one of the most – it was a beautiful game on the PS3. Beautiful. The maps were really big. It was a really detailed game. And frankly, the PSP just could not hold that series. Like the maps were itty bitty. Like that was the thing.
And they were
that,
broken up too into different chunks.
Yeah, they were broken up into different chunks. They were tiny. I felt claustrophobic, and they repeated the same tile sets over and over
they
again.
They did, yeah. What bothered me about it was, okay, before you jump up my butt about this, I love anime. I love all things Japanese. Please shut up if you don't think I do. But it's rare to find with the first Valkyria Chronicles, it's rare to find something with that much of an ingrained anime aesthetic carry so much dignity. There was no like wacky anime antics, no panty shots, none of the things that you might expect from that kind of content stereotypically. But then Valkyria Chronicles 2, it was all that. It was all anime stereotypes, which is why it was so like disappointing for me.
I mean, Valkyria Chronicles 1 had a lot of anime stereotypes, too. It's
but I think just they had, like, a certain degree of dignity.
Yeah,
where,
I mean, Valkyria Chronicles 1 really had a Miyazaki thing going on.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it just looked like it was some lost Studio Ghibli anime that was turned into a combat game. I mean, the emphasis on the sort of faux European time and setting and the love for beautifully rendered tanks and weapons and stuff like that, it's all very, very Miyazaki. And the characters kind of reflected that. And I feel like Valkyria Chronicles 2 was much more of sort of like your typical, you know, Fuji TV 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. anime that's 26 episodes long.
The art was even much worse.
Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Hmm. When I first picked up Valkyria Chronicles and it was new, I remember being almost immediately turned off by the anime aesthetic and the storytelling. Not so much the aesthetic, but just the – like these characters are introduced and before I can get to any action – I have to sit through a bunch of cutscenes about who they are and what they like to do. And, oh, Alicia works at a bakery and Welkin is the son of this general. And this goes on and on and on.
Well,
then I get to play through
a
skirmish and then there's a bunch more of that.
Yeah.
And then I'm reviewing it now on PC.
Oh,
and,
cool.
Seeing it again and like, I don't know why I thought that exactly. I was kind of just girding for the worst. And it's like, no, I'm enjoying it this time.
Hmm. Yeah, Valkyria Chronicles 1 was great, and then they tried to turn it into a franchise, which ultimately kind of killed it. I mean, Sega came out, they merchandised the hell out of it, they turned it into a pretty bad anime, and they
It was a bad anime. I forgot about that.
Yes, they did. And they were trying to make it a thing in Japan, and it fell flat on its face, and that's why we don't have any new Valkyria Chronicles, despite the fact that it has a pretty loyal cult audience over here.
Sad.
Mm. Well, the performance on Steam might change that.
I hope so. Yeah. I miss Valkyria Chronicles a lot.
Well, and I am kind of glad, though, that you warned me away from 2 because I was thinking, like, oh, this is really good. Maybe I'll pick up 2 after this.
Yeah. Supposedly 3 put things back on track, but that never came to the U.S.
Yeah,
sadly.
Back and we're going to talk about Metal Gear, but I want to talk uninterrupted for 1 second. You guys can jump in as soon as I'm done. So I think most people will identify Metal Gear's main sharp jumping moment as Metal Gear Solid 2: Sons of Liberty. I personally disagree with that. I will only say, like, I have to wonder what would happen if Kojima made such an audacious move in the age of social media. If you think about what Mass Effect 3 what happened with Mass Effect 3. Metal Gear Solid 2 was that times about a billion. Wouldn't you guys say so? Like, it fundamentally misled people with the game's premise. It's like, this is Solid Snake's next adventure, but the entire game was like, no, we fooled you. Like, yeah. The game was literally a trick. And for some people, I mean, like, okay, we're talking a lot about consumer rights lately in the wrong way, but I think, like, this will never happen again, but I loved it and I appreciate it. And at the time, I rolled with the punches, but I can understand why people didn't like it. I can understand why people thought, like, it's over for Metal Gear. It's over for Kojima at this point. I don't know. How did you guys feel about this?
I think the end game of that was incomprehensible.
Like, that is true, too.
Just a lot of weird stuff happens. Snake taps his headband and says infinite ammo, which is like breaking the fourth wall. there's the bit where you're just dropped into an arena with a ton of Metal Gear Rays, which have like been built up as Metal Gear killers, and you're just picking them off with a rocket launcher, which is sort of anticlimactic. And then like the whole thing is a VR sim. I was never really clear on exactly what was happening at the end.
Jeremy, can you like explain the symbolism? Like Raiden is a gamer, and you are Raiden. Raiden, sorry, yeah.
Well, I mean, no. The idea behind Metal Gear Solid 2 was really to say, okay, people love Solid Snake. They think he's awesome. Kojima was like, so let's – instead of trying to follow up on this amazing adventure, why don't we show what it's like to look at Snake from the outside? So he was this kind of enigma and, you know, the infinite ammo and all that. So you were put in the place of Raiden, you know, an inexperienced trooper who was experiencing basically Snake's adventures through virtual reality. So yeah, you were kind of he was kind of meant to be the gamer, like a literal surrogate for the
gamer. You put in your name at the beginning of the game, and then at the end of the game, he takes off his dog tag, and it's whatever name you put in a move ripped off of Earthbound. I said it.
but yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on in that, and the game really predicted the rise of media control through the internet, social media, that sort of thing. I honestly think that most people, you know, including myself, didn't really appreciate the game at the time because we didn't understand what it was trying to say and how relevant its messages would be. And when I, honestly, when I played it, I was like, I don't know what the hell happened. So I wanted to replay it, and I tried to go back a few months later and replay it, and I found that the sort of incidental dialogues and, like, you know, Peter Stillman and his sob stories about blowing up a church and stuff, like, that stuff was just too stupid, and I couldn't get past that crap to the actual core of the game. I think, you know, the game misaimed and misfired a lot in ways that are sort of incidental to the central thrust of the narrative. There needed to be more editing and more just kind of refinement.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he was a creator that had complete control at that point. It was right. Like, I mean, I appreciated it, but I mean, he definitely needed to be reined in at that point.
Yeah, I think all that stuff got in the way of the really interesting sort of metatextual narrative about Raiden and about information control and about, you know, trying to take control of the world by filtering and controlling its information. Like, that's really interesting and that's really relevant and really kind of forward thinking. But then, you know, there's like all the stupid people in Dead Cell and what's going on with Fortune? Why can she deflect bullets sometimes but not other times, and then she can again? Like, it was just too much happening that didn't make sense and didn't really seem well thought out. So it expected the player to kind of suspend their disbelief a little too much. I think a tighter script would have done that game a lot of benefits.
If, like, I'm viewing it in the context of that stuff just existing in Metal Gear Solid 2, which I'm okay with. It's irritating in some respects, but I like it just for how weird it is. But the fact that they had to spend most of Metal Gear Solid 4, like, explaining and working their way through everything, that should have just been, like, that's in the past. That's what kind of irritated me about that game.
And the real sad part is that all they basically said was nanomachines.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of time saying nanomachines.
It was like the midichlorians of Metal Gear. I mean, how do you guys feel about Metal Gear Solid 2? I feel like it should be stated, like, if you weren't around for this, like, the press and the public were intentionally misled to believe this was a game starring Solid Snake and only Solid Snake. And the theme of the game is misinformation, where, like, you don't know what's happening at any time. It, like Michael said, it turns out to be like a VR simulation, things like that. So, I mean, how did you guys react to it? I'm just curious if you were there, if you bought it. I mean, I can say that I worked at a GameStop at the time, and people were visibly and audibly angry with us for the most part. But, like, the game – I was there for the game's launch, and, like, the next day we had, like, a billion trade-ins. Like, people were upset. They, like, blew through it in one night and were like, this is trash. I hate this series. I hate this character. I'm never playing Metal Gear again. Like, I witnessed the anger from fans. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I bought it when it came out, and I think I had it spoiled for me on the internet a little bit, and then somebody was like, you don't play as Solid Snake. Like, what the hell are you talking about? No, I obviously play as Solid Snake. I played the demo, and then I got it, and, like, it switched to Raiden, and I just kind of thought, like, okay, well, this is just a gag. It'll switch back to Solid Snake after a while, and it never did, and that was a little bit disappointing. So, I mean, I never really warmed up to Raiden, but, like, I accepted that, like, okay, well, he's the protagonist. I'm playing as him. Fine.
I didn't own a PlayStation 2 at the time, so I didn't play Metal Gear Solid 2.
Well, you're disqualified from this conversation, Ken.
And I've actually yet to play it.
Ah, really? Okay.
Yep. I own the HD collection, but, you know, I'm extremely busy these days. But I have played Metal Gear Solid, the original, and Metal Gear Solid 3. So I feel like I've gotten a pretty good dose of the best Metal Gear Solid
has to offer. Yeah.
I almost feel like I'm curious to play Metal Gear Solid 2, especially since Jeremy he's written some really excellent pieces on it. It's a shame that 1UP's gone because he wrote a really phenomenal look back on it. But my recollection at the time was I loved Metal Gear Solid and I considered it the best game to come out on the original PlayStation. I was excited as anybody for Metal Gear Solid 2 and the PlayStation 2. And I mean, everybody was just going bonkers for it when they were showing it in the original press demos, like Snake taking off the hood in the rain.
It looked better than most PS2 games did for years.
First person view, and you're like shooting the bottles of alcohol. And
the cutscenes. They gave you the ability to zoom in and change the camera angle just to prove this is done in real time.
Yeah, I love that. Mm.
Like that was them showing off.
It looked amazing, and I was as excited as anybody. But like I said, I didn't have a PlayStation 2. I was in college, And it came out, and then it seemed like everybody stopped talking about it, and it wasn't until years later that I found out, oh yeah, about the great switcheroo through the internet, and everybody seemed to hate it. I think this was around the time of Metal Gear Solid 3, where there was coming out, and it was like, well, pfft, Metal Gear Solid 3, Metal Gear Solid 2 was the worst. So yeah. I'm like, what? What happened to MGS2?
I feel like the story of Metal Gear Solid 2, the premise, the concept behind it is really interesting. I feel like as a game, it's actually pretty lackluster. The Big Shell is not an interesting environment. It's extremely repetitive. There's not a lot of varied mission objectives. A lot of the mission objectives feel just kind of stupid, like go find a guy with a pacemaker.
There's so few. I mean, I know I said I like this game, but that there are legitimate complaints I have. Like there's like maybe three boss fights, and like one of the bosses
like
you don't
fight.
There's
a real dearth of content. I mean, compared to Metal Gear Solid 3, which is a game that just sprawls. It actually, you know, they showed the physical amount of space compared to the Metal Gear Solid 5 map. They had like a chart showing all the actual land mass of each Metal Gear game at TGS compared to the mass of space in 5.
Right.
And Metal Gear Solid 3 is not actually that big, but it felt big. It felt so huge. Metal Gear Solid 2 is the opposite. It feels so small.
It's all like indoor environments and like
Like they tried to mix it up by letting you slip on bird poop and stuff. It didn't quite work. And like I said, there was a lot of superfluous crap in the story. Not enough game and too much incidental dialogue that didn't really drive anything and didn't really push things forward. I mean, I guess sure the Peter Stillman bomb thing, that was about misinformation too, because he lived this lie all these years, but it was stupid.
It was stupid.
Like, I mean, it's okay to be clever and stupid at the same time. It's possible. And that game really manages it. So it's disappointing on some levels. But honestly, I feel like Metal Gear has jumped the shark with Snake's Revenge.
Snake's Revenge?
It's pretty early on.
I think you're being facetious.
I mean, okay. That wasn't a Kojima game, but
Not to linger on Metal Gear for too long.
Not the inferior NES port of 1? Come on.
Metal Gear is funny because it seemed to jump the shark with 2. Right the ship with 3, and then jump the shark all over again with 4.
I totally agree with you, Kat. I mean, 4, I just it pissed me off at every instance. Like, after playing 3, which is one of my favorite games, I'm like, okay, he's back on track. He knows what he's doing. And then 4 was like, nope, he's out
3,
of control again.
3 is one of the best games ever made.
Oh, I would agree. It's
and
in my top like 5
from
of all time.
One of the best games ever made to friggin' Metal Gear Solid 4. And I think I've seen people argue that Metal Gear Solid 4 is ego run amok, and I don't know if I can disagree.
Well, who was it at Something Awful that did the article with like the pictures of weird stuff from MGS4 and like the monkey in the diaper and just
was
said Metal Gear underneath?
That might have been me. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. That was brilliant.
Oh. If it wasn't me, I'm sorry whoever wrote that. Do we have more to say about Metal Gear Solid 4? I mean, like, I don't want to linger on Metal Gear for too long.
It's just a very strange game, and really, like,
Jeremy, you reviewed it, and I remember
I reviewed it, and you know, looking at it objectively, like I did for the review, I gave it a good score.
You gave it a B, didn't you?
Maybe like a B+.
I remember Shane was like just blown away and shocked that you gave it that.
I mean, I gave it a good score. Don't get me wrong, but. Like, in my heart, I was really kind of disappointed. But at the same time, I was like, how much of that is, you know, my expectation versus what the game actually is? And I haven't gone back to revisit it, so.
There's like a third of the game I like, but the parts that I don't
the
like,
first two chapters
I really,
are really
hate.
Good.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And then you get to Prague and you're like, okay. And then you get to the game just wanking over itself in.
The Return to Shadow
Moses.
Yeah,
Shadow Moses. Man, that. Yeah. And then the whole.
When you're on that when
the Mount Rushmore thing, oh my god!
I nearly quit when you're on this. Jeremy's losing it.
Oh god!
I just
remember that.
I think
it's
we
so
have
stupid.
A winner. I think we have a winner for
okay Mount Rushmore.
Shark jump.
Yeah, Mount Rushmore with like the faces of the sun, the les enfants
Jesus.
Terribles.
I think for me, and maybe this has something to do with me not liking Valkyria Chronicles when it came out, but the length of the cutscenes was absurd. And I mean, I like cutscenes, I like plot, but like this 45-minute unskippable dialogue scene where like I'm just piloting the Metal Gear Mark II around their what was it? They like lived on a plane or something?
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah.
Snakes on a plane.
And I think by that point in time, we had grown out of the fascination with cutscenes that were that long.
And, you know, I think part of the idea behind the cutscenes was to make the loading look shorter.
I see.
Oh, but they still had the ridiculous installs.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Just watch Snake smoke a cigarette for 20 minutes.
And they'll tell you why it's bad at the same time.
You can't do this because you'll get cancer. He's already dying, so it's fine.
Yeah, so many poor choices. Like, it just made me so sad.
And if it hadn't jumped there, then definitely the vagina bomb.
Oh, God. God.
Ground Zeroes?
Ground Zeroes, yeah.
I hope that's not a thing in any other game. I never want that to be in any other game. Yeah. I don't want it to be in Ground Zeroes. I want them to patch it out.
Get it out of there.
Yeah.
Scoop it out of there. I'm sorry.
So yeah. It seems... So are we still talking about Metal Gear Solid?
We can still talk about Metal Gear.
All right. It's like it just has so many moments where it jumped the shark. It's hard to stop, I guess.
Four especially, but I will say like Peace Walker righted it all for me.
Mm-hmm. Did it?
Yeah. It's such
was
a
it that
game.
Good?
So good.
It's like
and it was out of nowhere.
Yeah. Like, it feels like XCOM in that you are doing missions and also building a base. And the base building is so involved and like has so many systems and you're making equipment and you're like unlocking.
And it has so many
items.
Benefits.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's not just like, oh, I'm doing this thing and it's idle busy work. No, like it has huge benefits for how you play the game.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite. It's like my second favorite Metal Gear game outside of Peace Walker. I mean, Snake Eater.
Just when you think that he's finally lost it, he pulls you back in. Yeah. And you're actually really high in Phantom Pain too.
Me?
Yeah, you're like excited for it.
Yeah, I like. Okay, this
because
is
it brings back those elements. I mean,
well,
this
you know,
is
Big
outside
Boss
the
has
purview.
A has a cybernetic arm that makes Bob's heart happy.
Yeah. I'm gonna Fulton
he has,
so many
he has,
sheep.
He has a cybernetic arm for everything.
Based on the unplayable hands-off E3 demo I saw, it looks a lot like Metal Gear Solid 3. Like in that, except it's just like do whatever you want any way
so
you want.
It's the opposite of Star Trek movies where basically the odd numbered Metal Gear Solids are the ones that you want to play.
I think Metal Gear will always have us on like an emotional roller coaster of highs and lows. They will never be consistently good.
So yeah, Metal Gear is a game that's a series that's up and down. Can we talk about one that's even more mixed, like it's more complicated. Castlevania.
Okay, yes.
Like there's no single jumping the shark moment for Castlevania because it's always had brilliant games and it's always had crappy games. Like at the very beginning, Castlevania was two games launched on NES and MSX at the same time. The NES game is amazing. It was so good.
Poor
for its
Konami.
Time.
We've spent so much time on Konami at this point.
Well,
jeez.
They
Silent
need to
Hill,
get their shit together.
They really do
their
get
games
their
really
together.
Do jump the shark a lot, don't they?
They need to get their act together.
It's almost as if
I mean, Saw 1 was okay, but Saw 2.
Castlevania, the NES game, great. MSX game, interesting, but not really fun or well put together. So right there at the very start, within a month of each other, you have good and bad Castlevania, and it's just been like that. When Castlevania 2, awesome. Castlevania Haunted Castle for arcade.
Wait.
Yeah, when did that come
Simon's
out?
Quest was awesome?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For its time. I mean, if you had some hints, it was great.
but
Haunted
caveat.
Castle was poop. Yeah, Castlevania
Haunted
3.
Castle is unplayable.
Yeah, it's garbage. Castlevania 3, amazing. Castlevania The Adventure for Game Boy, crap. Mm. It's just back and forth for that series. And then, you know, you look at the late 90s into the previous decade, and you had like the series kind of split where there were these 3D games and they were all just increasingly worse, and then you had the 2D games on portable systems, and those were usually pretty good. Actually, usually great, sometimes just pretty good.
Yeah,
Castlevania 64, the big jump to 3D, which was...
I mean, it did have skeletons riding motorcycles. That was cool.
That's
game,
another one I like.
But that game wasn't complete.
Did.
They released the actual finished version a year later as Legacy of Darkness.
I was gonna say, it's the game so nice they made it twice.
Konami was desperate to turn it into a AAA type 3D game, and they've
been
did it like
for 15
years. At least twice with the PS2 and failed both times, and finally just said screw it and rebooted it with Lords of Shadow. So, I mean, Konami kind of. They killed the best thing about that series, unfortunately.
Yeah, Lords of Shadow actually kind of completed the shark jumping.
Yeah.
Because of Lords of Shadow. So the first game, let's say that's good, okay? That's great. But on the next games, both of them, the handheld 2D game and the HD console sequel, both sucked. So that's it for Castlevania.
Well, Lords of Shadow also had one of the biggest shark jumping moments ever at the end. If you don't mind spoiling it.
Well, attention fans, there's a spoiler coming. Please prepare for it.
The main character turns out to be ends up being Dracula, and they're in modern-day New York.
Yeah.
With death.
Well, I guess in the sense that, like, this is such a ridiculous, over-the-top thing. How are they going to top this? And then they really don't.
Nope.
Yeah. I mean, I really like
well,
that.
Well, they top
ending.
It by making you do stealth sequences as a rat.
Yeah. Those stealth bits were the worst. Like, I sort of liked that game, but yeah, like, the stealth was execrable.
But what I'm saying is that up until Lords of Shadow Mirror of Fate, you could always count on there being like this alternate branch to Castlevania that was good. Even if you hated what they were doing in one form of the series, at least there was the other form. But now they're both just tainted, and I don't have any expectations for that series going forward. It's really kind of sad.
Yeah, unless there's some
it's
massive...
been a mainstay for me. I mean, I talked in that 10-minute episode about how desperately I searched for the original Castlevania.
I'm hoping for a reboot that is more meaningful than Lords of Shadow, but I doubt it will ever happen.
So two more Jump the Shark moments before we move on. Bomberman Act Zero.
Ugh. Oh, geez. Thank you. I find I have to keep reminding myself that game is real. It feels like a Photoshop, mm-hmm. like someone made, you know?
Features more realistic graphics and a dark dystopian future setting.
Yes. I haven't seen any of those in video games. I'm glad Bomberman was finally brave enough to approach the concept.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like a parody of the darker and edge. It's something like The Onion would come up with for the Xbox 360.
Was that a 360 game?
It was a 360 game.
Yeah. Was that Hudson's last game or something?
Maybe.
I don't think it was their last game.
I think they made real Bomberman games after that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But just this notion of taking Bomberman and making it a freaking dystopian game.
A cat. Ride around on colorful kangaroos.
Mm. You're still picking on Konami. You're still picking on Konami.
What? Really? That's Hudson.
Yeah. Hudson.
Oh,
wow.
Konami.
Konami published that. That's right. Yeah.
We really hate Konami then.
Here's a game that was not from Konami that is a big shark jump.
Which one is that?
Prince of Persia, Warrior Within.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ubisoft
is the Konami of France.
Before you continue, Cap, Prince of Persia has been rebooted five times.
The Sands of Time was beloved.
Oh, yeah.
But people were like, well, the combat wasn't that great. And then Warrior Within was...
Well, some metal thongs would change that.
Actually, I think Michael just talked about this on his podcast. Didn't you just talk about Warrior Within on your show?
Possibly. Okay. I think we might have talked about Intercools.
Could be it, yeah.
Which, Warrior Within, I think that series was sort of redeemed. They tried to do The Forgotten Sands a few years later, which was an Intercool between 1 and 2. But, nobody cared by that point. Nobody wanted to see any more of that series.
They thought the Jake Gyllenhaal movie would bring a newfound relevance.
Warrior Within kind of killed it because, Two Thrones after that, people were like, whatever.
Yeah, well, Warrior Within – and then Two Thrones was, the original Sands of Time team coming back. Ubisoft was doing this thing at the time where they were doing annual releases, but they were staggering the studio. So, Ubisoft Montreal would work on it one year, and then Shanghai would work on it the next, stuff like that. And that's what happened. So they just lost creative control, and it was a disaster with fans. And then the third game was them basically trying to correct it. We're gonna try and retcon 2 out of existence using time manipulation, and this is all about fixing what happened in 2.
See, that's the definition of a shark jump, where they're trying to retcon that game out of existence and pretend it didn't happen, but can't do it.
Nope. I mean, Metal Gear at least had the decency to just kind of gloss over portable ops. They were like, oh, I'm so glad we're done with that crap at San Hieronimo. That's it. That's all they talk about.
Yeah.
That just a passing mention and no more mention of what was his name? Null or whatever.
Yeah, I think. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But Null was Frank Yeager. Null's an important character.
I can't even remember. I can't remember who they talked about. But anyway, it was basically just them glossing over.
He was the guy that became the ninja, right?
Yes.
I thought so. It was like the ninja's background. I played that game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Question I kind of have is, ultimately, what is the biggest shark jump moment in a video game?
This is not Retronauts. It's not retro at all. This is like 2012 Retronauts. But
this whole episode has been kind of like 2012 Retronauts because a lot of games jumped the shark in the past few years.
I play fast and loose with the rules in this show, but I will say Resident Evil 6 is probably in recent memory the most preposterous like mess of a game I've ever played.
Well, you can go back to what led up to it, which was Chris Redfield punching the boulder.
That, yes. I mean, there was a logical series of events that led us to Resident Evil 6, but...
You say logical, but I don't think you mean it.
Illogical series of events, yeah. But just, okay, this I don't want to continue on with this for too long because this is not an old game at all, but I feel like it did not respect anything that 4 did, which was the turning point for the series that made it relevant again. Instead, it was like, oh, what's Assassin's Creed doing? What's Call of Duty doing? What is everyone else doing? Let's not do our own thing. And it was, they just completely, then the game is just like 9 million people working on it, never talking to each other. The idea of four different groups crossing over doesn't ever really pan out, except for when you all fight the same boss over and over and over again.
You know what people want to kill zombies with? Wrestling moves.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
If you want to go to the strictest definition of jumping the shark, in Happy Days, Fonzie jumps the shark because the show had been on for X number of years and it become increasingly irrelevant.
Let me tell you how crazy Happy Days is. Mork and Mindy is a spinoff. There was a goddamn alien on that show at some point.
It was becoming increasingly irrelevant, and they did that as a stunt. And after that, like people were like, it jumped the shark. So that kind of happened with Resident Evil 6, right? It had become increasingly irrelevant, and they just threw everything at the wall to see what would stick.
The most telling thing that I can cite about Resident Evil 6 to show just kind of how desperate an attempt it was to, you know, matter again, is that it is the only time I've ever played a Resident Evil demo and had the producers hovering around me and watching members of the American gaming press with eagle eyes to gauge our interest and our feelings and get feedback. And they so desperately wanted us to like it. I mean, it was very much them saying, Why is this series not selling in America anymore? We've got to make it popular over there again.
It's strange because
it was so pandering.
Five. This is not like I don't really know a lot about sales numbers in general, but I know 5 is like the best selling Resident Evil ever. Like 5 was an insane hit for them.
Really,
people were on board with what they were doing. 5 was a very adulterated version of 4, but it was still fun. But 6 was nothing like that at all. And it was weird that they had no confidence when clearly people liked what they were doing. You know, I don't know.
I have a couple friends who work at Capcom, and I don't know if they'd want me passing this on, so I won't mention them by name. But one of them said that Resident Evil is like a couple years ago was like their biggest selling title ever. Like it doesn't matter what it is. You put the Resident Evil title on something, it will sell, and it's because of those god-awful movies. Resident Evil, The Mercenaries 3D sold through the roof even though it was an awful game.
That would not let you delete your save, right?
Right.
That was it. Savegate.
I would argue the biggest shark jump in gaming history was Fabula Nova Crystallis as a whole thing, was insane.
That was like a 7-year like slow like, motion shark jump.
It wasn't so much putting the cart before the horse as putting an entire fleet of carts and maybe some schooners and an airship. And a tiny little pony.
It's sort we of didn't like know waiting it. For a horse to be born.
We didn't know it. But it portended.
Here you go, fool. This is your future.
Yeah. We didn't know it at the time, but it portended the decline of the Japanese game industry in that generation of games. Because, I mean, Final Fantasy XIII didn't happen for years. Nothing of real note came out.
I think you're ascribing a little too much importance to that.
But. You think so? Yeah. Because in 2006, people were really hyped up for games, and then just nothing happened out of Japan for years and years.
I would say that by the time the HD generation hit, people were already starting to lose interest in Japanese games. I mean, it was something that I, as a fan of Japanese games in the press, was kind of annoyed about and I found really discouraging. But yeah, I wouldn't say that it was.
But in 2005, Microsoft was making a real effort to get Japanese exclusives and
that's because thought they had a chance in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they like said, this is really important. We need to get Japanese games on our system. And now, like, they don't even care. Like years later, it's like
where's our Xbox
matter.
One Blue Dragon?
I remember,
I don't want that stuff.
Yeah, Blue Dragon was like one of the biggest things in 2005. It's like, well, we got the creator of Final Fantasy who's making a new exclusive RPG for our system.
He got the creator of Final Fantasy II to make a Dragon Quest game for us, basically. And then he made a Final Fantasy game for them, which, like, I've never played that one. I did play through Blue Dragon. I have no memories of it.
You and most people. But Fabula Nova Crystallis, I mean, for God's sake, Versus 13 still isn't out yet. It's now 15, Final Fantasy 15. Like, I think that if Square Enix could go back in time and wipe that from history, they would.
Yeah. So,
wow, that was a sad pause.
Deafening silence. I will say, now that we're on topic of Square, do you think Final Fantasy 13 as a whole is the moment of the series that jumped the shark for you?
Final Fantasy 2.
2? Wow.
I mean, Final Fantasy 13 was, it was an anticlimax, right? Yeah. Where it came out and it wasn't great, but everybody was kind of expecting it not to be great. Like, I don't feel like anybody had these huge expectations for 13 in 2010. Nobody expected it to single-handedly save the games industry. Like, the ship had already sailed. Like, Fabula Nova Crystallis was already a running joke by 2010.
I think so, yeah.
So 13 in general was just kind of like, all right, whatever. 13-2, whatever. And Lightning Returns, good game, but whatever.
So for me, it was 11. Like, that was the point where, like, I was super excited. I hadn't really played many MMOs at the time. It's like, it's a Final Fantasy MMO. This is going to be so amazing. And then, like, get in, and it's so incredibly grindy. I think I played it for a month and only ever made it to, like, level 3 or 4.
Whoa.
And, like, this is just,
man, they've really
joyless.
They've really changed their philosophy with 14.
14 is pretty good, yeah.
14, you're good. Like, you know, you play for a couple of days and you're ding level 15.
Nice.
I'm still unreasonably angry that they made it a numbered game in the series. Yeah.
It really should have been Final
Fantasy. How dare you mess it up?
It's okay.
Now you can say there are Final Fantasy games you haven't finished.
They did it to 11 and 14.
I actually feel like if you want to talk about a game that should have been a side story, Metal Gear Solid 2 should have been a side story. Hmm. If they hadn't numbered that, people would be like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, it's Raiden's game. You know, if it were like Metal Gear Revengeance Zero or something.
Oh.
Sure, yeah, okay, that's cool. It's Raiden's tale. We haven't played Metal Gear Solid 2 yet, the missing story of Solid Snake's missions with philanthropy, but I'm sure that's going to be great.
At the same time, I wanted them to make Peace Walker Metal Gear Solid 5 because it kind of is, you know? They just were like, oh, it's just a PSP game, so we can't like make it that important. But it is kind of the most, I don't know, the most ambitious in terms of game mechanics Metal Gear has been so far, in my opinion.
Back to Metal Gear again. Everything else.
What's that?
I said it's since been brought to everything else.
Yeah, that's true. It is now a, I guess, last-gen game at this point. But, yeah, you can play it. I recommend it.
And I remember, to bring it back to Final Fantasy for a second, Final Fantasy XII, I started playing that back when I was working with Christian Nutt. And I remember just being incredibly dissatisfied early on. It's like, I feel like all I'm doing is pushing one button to make my character attack on a timer. And he's like, oh, well, you should set it up so that the AI takes care of it and you don't even have to do that. Like, why do I want to play a game that I'm not going to play?
That's a good question.
Is setting up a gambit less engaging than hitting attack over and over again in combat?
I mean, don't know. I mean, I feel like I never made it very far. I lost patience
immediately. I feel like they said, okay, here's how people play the games. Let's take the emphasis off of that element, the repetitive, grindy nature of combat, and just let them explore and go out into the world. And I appreciated that. I thought it was great. Like, I don't want every game to play like that. I like, you know, different styles of RPGs. I like, you know, something like Entry and Odyssey where every combat action you take is super important because you could die at any time. Like, that's interesting too. But for Final Fantasy XII, it gave you this big world. It was like an MMO-sized world. And I don't want to have to get into constant random battles with that. So the Gambit system was a nice way to sort of take the load off of the distraction of combat and let that sort of happen, but let you kind of keep your mind on where you were going and what the quest was. And that was great to me.
Combat was only a distraction and like, oh, another random battle. Okay, here we go. But I like feeling involved. I like making decisions. I like feeling that like I'm hitting X and driving home a sword, whatever.
I'm kind of like halfway on Michael's side, halfway on Jeremy's side, because I did enjoy the game, but I felt like after a certain point, I felt like the illusion of control was more important than them just removing it entirely, because like I still wanted to make decisions even if they weren't meaningful. Yeah, and I know the gambits were, you know, they didn't involve decision making, but I felt like I just wanted to be able to do more in that game, you know.
I think part of it maybe was that I didn't necessarily play it safe with the game. And because it is just this kind of big open world, I was more than happy to go into places I wasn't supposed to go into. And at that point, like, it's really important to have your gambits in place and to really have a smart strategy for dealing with these enemies that outlevel you badly. Like, it gave you the freedom to just kind of wander wherever you want and put yourself in really, like, way over your head. And I fought bosses way out of sequence. And it was great that the game let you do that. And the combat system, like, I don't know. It was really satisfying when I could set up gambits that would let me survive despite being way too weak for the area that I was in.
I would like to see another take on that style. You know, I don't know if Square will ever revisit it, though.
I like Final Fantasy XII. I love the open world in that game, but I always felt that it felt a little too much like an MMO. And
that was the idea.
It was a big, messy game, especially the license board. I did not like the license board at all. And it tried to do a lot, and I appreciate that. And, of course, it kind of fizzles out after the halfway point. And I appreciate its experimental nature, but I don't know that it always hangs together very well. Now, if we're talking about Final Fantasy Jumping the Shark, how about Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, where you go from Game of Thrones...
Tactics A2.
Much worse.
I like Tactics Advance, I should say. But Final Fantasy Tactics, Game of Thrones-esque, realistic fantasy world, and then some character, and then Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, some kids are sucked into a book or
yeah,
something.
But I mean, it's a different story for a different audience. It wasn't meant for the same audience that played Tactics.
It's like a Gumby strategy RPG.
Yeah. I mean, it was really meant for a younger audience. Oh, okay. And, you know, as kind of an introductory strategy RPG, it was actually really good. Better than good. Pretty complicated. But A2 actually, like, the game mechanics in that are broken. Mm. Like, that is a shark jumping moment.
Yeah.
Like, the story doesn't matter. And the game isn't fun to play.
It's all about grinding for what, like, drops?
Yeah, random drops.
Yeah, it was like
a
weird...
You can't advance your characters until you get just stupid random drops. Terrible. Such a bad game.
So let's move on from Final Fantasy as we wrap up here. I want to know, like, I'm sure we'll have our own answers for this, but how about The Legend of Zelda? Where do we stand on this? Has it ever jumped the shark? I will explain my stance on things. Skyward Sword. When I worked for 1UP, I wrote a big article about why I didn't like Skyward Sword. I thought critics gave it too much praise for it not doing a lot of interesting things. And that got me the most hate ever for an article. I think I got like 700 comments.
Even more than saying video games shouldn't treat women like jiggle meat?
They were probably about tied. But in the case of Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, it was like I feel like they had Skyrim envy in that they knew this big RPG was coming out. So they're like, this is the biggest Zelda ever. But the thing is, it was big, but you weren't doing meaningful things. And the things they had you do were like Banjo-Kazooie level, like fetch quests and like collecting the jiggies and things like that. And what made it even worse was there was this giant overworld, but all you were doing is flying to the next destination that they forced you to go to. There was no exploration. It was just like it might have well have been like a Mario game where it's like now you're on level 1-2 because the exploration of Zelda was just an illusion to guide you through this very, very linear and way too long experience.
I feel like Skyward Sword was kind of the culmination of a general malaise for Legend of Zelda. So, like, by the end of Skyward Sword, I was like, Zelda, yeah, it's fine, I guess. And then I feel like a lot of people played A Link Between Worlds and were like, yes.
Yes.
This is why I love Zelda. This is great.
They pulled Zelda out of the shark at that moment with the 3DS game.
Did it jump the shark? Was Skyward Sword a jump the shark moment or was it just a slow decline?
I think it was riding up the ramp and... And A Link Between Worlds came along. It was a big old boat that just smashed into the shark.
I mean, if
so
you want to talk about...
So now Skyward Sword just jumps.
If you want to
no
talk
shark.
About jumping the shark, I mean, Spirit Tracks. I mean, the whole game, you're
this
on a
again.
Train.
This again. My God.
Okay, Spirit Tracks. I'm going to piss Cat off because I liked Phantom Hourglass. I liked revisiting that temple. I am like one of three people
Phantom
in the universe.
Phantom Hourglass,
if like the whole point is to understand the core dungeon... And play it more efficiently every time. Like, to me, it's very similar in spirit to something like a roguelike.
Yeah, that's why I
liked
it.
Like, it really, like, yeah, you can play it badly and have a miserable time every time you go to the dungeon, but if you play it smart and are, you know, like really take the time to learn the mechanics there and the layout of the place, like you breeze through the places you've been through previously in a matter of seconds.
It's not just the misplaced stealth mechanics, which are misplaced. I'm sorry. It's the fact that the game is sterile. It does not have any flavor whatsoever. In trying to replicate Wind Waker on the DS, I don't know. They somehow left something on the drawing floor.
That I will agree with you on. They did not add many new ideas.
The soundtrack was terrible. And the dungeons, like not a single one stands out to me. They were so boring. They were poorly laid out. The puzzles were not very good. It was a struggle to get through that game. And Spirit Tracks, you know what? I like make fun of it because, frankly, the idea of being like on a train and all that stuff, it's stupid. Okay, yeah, I admit that. But the dungeons in that game were way, way better.
It had cool
Phantom
dungeons. I will tell you why I did not like that game, though. At a certain point in the game, you have to blow into this dumbass pan flute like you're freaking Zamfir or something in order to move on to the next part. And I got to a point where I couldn't pass it. Like, this is a game ostensibly designed for, like, kids, right? I guess. Yeah. Or, like, all ages. But this tiny basic minigame, I couldn't pass it. I couldn't, like, blow into the flute the right way in order to move on. So I had to send it back to Gamefly. I just was like...
I was doing the guide for Spirit Tracks. And I was riding into 1UP on the bus. And I had the game with me. And I was on the final boss. And what you have to do is you have to, like, hurt him enough and, like, stun him. And then you have to play the song on the flute. But the microphone was picking up noise from the bus. So I couldn't actually beat that segment until I got into a really quiet area. And then I could blow into the damn thing to make it work. So that tells you all you need to know about the pan flute.
I hate that pan flute.
It was so over-engineered. It wasn't even funny.
God. And like – and okay, I'll let Michael needs to say something because I feel like we've been talking too much. But like in Skyward Sword, the one thing I hated the most was like the instrument part of it. Like in like previous games, you could use your instrument to change time, make weather effects happen, change the world in some way. In Skyward Sword, all you did was wave the Wiimote back and forth to open a door like every 30 hours. And that was basically it.
Skyward Sword's problem was that it was a game built around the notion of having the one-to-one sword controls that everybody had always wanted. And once they got that perfected, they were like, and we'll put in some other stuff as well.
Yeah.
Like, the dungeons were great, but as you said, the exploration was extremely wanting.
It's funny, it took most of the Wii's life cycle for them to deliver the one thing we all assumed would happen immediately. Michael, please, Zelda.
I will agree, Skyward Sword is the one Zelda that I have to force myself to play.
Oh, I don't think it's worth it.
I haven't made it more than a few hours in. Every time I go back, it's like, okay, I'm gonna do it this time. And I'm like playing like, yeah, I'm kind of enjoying this. And then I stop. And then I just never feel any desire to go back.
Don't go back.
That's how I feel about Ocarina of Time.
Really?
Me too, actually.
I only feel that way because I played it so many times.
But you know what? Like, Twilight Princess, not as bad as everybody says.
Yeah, I don't think Ocarina holds up as well as everybody thinks it does.
I agree.
But it was great for its time.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm saying Ocarina didn't click for me at the time, but I don't think it's a bad game.
No.
I think it just didn't quite hit what I wanted.
Is it
the best
game ever made, as some people are suggesting?
I will say, though, that I've never played a bad Zelda game, and I've never played a Zelda game that I didn't enjoy. Even Ocarina, which I kind of lost interest in, I still like it. Like, I don't even consider myself a particular, like, Zelda fanboy or anything. I sort of lost interest in the series as a faithful follower with Ocarina of Time. Hmm. Like, before that, I was really, really into it, and then kind of, you know, didn't really play that much of Majora's Mask, haven't finished Skyward Sword, but, like, every time I play a Zelda game, I really enjoy it, and I feel like I should be a super huge fan of this, and I'm not. But like at the same time, I don't feel like the series has ever lost its way. And maybe it's had a few small missteps, but nothing critical, nothing to the point where I'm like, oh, this is over.
I feel that if you play more Skyward Sword, you'll change your mind. But thankfully, A Link Between Worlds is out, so Zelda's fine now. I think
Phantom
Zelda's going to be okay.
Was a misstep.
Yeah.
It was.
I disagree, Kat, but I hate Spirit Tracks, so we're kind of like the DS Zeldas.
I like them both.
Yeah.
I gave them both good scores because they're good.
Hmm.
I will throw out, has anybody played the Way of the Samurai games?
No, they seem really interesting.
Yeah, I've always meant to.
Really interesting. Like, they're kind of these short things that are like choose-your-own-adventure games where like you can have a radically different storyline every time you play, although they're like, you know, four or five different ones. And like the first two were kind of, you know, semi-serious, semi-anime. Like we're historically accurate, but we have this guy named Dona Dona who's got a gigantic afro. And that's just part of the game world. And then three like went almost super serious. It was it felt like a Toshiro Mifune movie. And then four, which only came out for download on PlayStation 3, was absolutely insane. Hmm. Like I don't know if you guys have seen anything about
this. I have
this,
that game on my PS3, but I never have played it yet.
It's bizarre. I was like, first off, it garbles the history angle to the point where like, oh, the British have landed in the black ships and their ambassador is a 12-year-old girl who just wants to heal everyone.
Wow.
And she has big Goldilocks curls, of course, because all Western girls
do. Is her name Halsey?
Huh?
Is her name Halsey?
I don't know. It might be. It's been a while.
What's the guy's name? Or Admiral
Commodore Perry?
Commodore. Yeah. Why am I thinking Admiral Halsey?
I don't know.
It's like from some space game or something.
It's like Gundam.
But then, like, they added like a night creeping mini game where you could like make a date with some girl and then you'd have to creep into her house at night and avoid her family. And then, like, you'd have this weird wrestling match with her, like an actual pro wrestling match, but with barnyard sounds. And if you got caught trying to creep in on her, then you'd be subjected to this like weird sexual torture thing where like a mini game where you're like,
wow,
you're being lowered slowly onto like a some sort of sawhorse thing.
Oh, one of those wedges?
Yeah.
What?
It's bizarre. Like it makes no sense as a samurai game.
I have to see this now. I mean, it's on my PS3. I need to see this now.
It's definitely worth looking at. It's strange.
So you're saying that was the jump the shark moment?
That was the jump the shark for that entire series. Like we've just completely gone off the rails. The tone is it's a huge tonal shift. And yeah, I mean, it's not bad, but really weird.
I think when your samurai game adds a dating sim with stealth mechanics, that's a sign that things are going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap up like in a minute or two. Can we think of anything else? If you can think of anything we missed, let us know in the comments or just tweet at us or whatever, because I'm sure we missed a few. But anything else we can think of?
I don't know, like SimCity.
SimCity.
God, that was such a shark
jump. SimCity. God, what was the last
SimCity, one? SimCity, the most recent one where they made it put it all online and couldn't even get it running for a long time and then completely messed up the mechanics and everybody generally hated it.
SimCity.
Yeah. SimCity.
Yeah. I think SimCity might be one of the biggest ever.
I was high on that game during previews, but I didn't play enough more than a few hours of it. And then, like when I went back to it, I was just doing nothing one day. I was like, I'll try to play it. And then it was like it required like literally 3 hours worth of updates.
That was a game where the very premise was so fundamentally misguided that it probably was never going to work.
Hmm. Are we missing anything else?
Street Fighter Cross Tekken maybe, adding the gems.
Oh, the gem system. Yeah. We were just talking there was never a Tekken Cross Street Fighter. They never followed through with that.
No.
I mean, I would argue that Kingdom Hearts 2 was a pretty big shark jump.
For me personally, I mean, I didn't want to say it because I've delivered this rant like a billion times.
I have no problem saying it. I think Kingdom Hearts 2 was – I think Kingdom Hearts as a series was a pretty big shark jump for Square Enix as a publisher, as a developer.
The kids love it.
Those kids love it.
Oh, yeah. No, it sells millions.
Those crazy kids.
It's probably its most important franchise at this point. But I feel like there is a clear dividing line between the Square that we knew and love and the Square that they are today. And that game was Kingdom Hearts.
Hmm.
How about World of Mana?
Oh, you mean World of Mana being the – it was like the Fabula PSG Nova game? Crystallis of
– No. Wasn't that what it's called? Or Dawn of Mana.
I thought World of Mana the collection of games.
Dawn of Mana.
Wasn't there like a name for the collection of games that came
out? Yeah,
that was – Children of Mana, Dawn of Mana, and there was a
World
third
of Mana,
one.
Yeah. Heroes of Mana.
Heroes of Mana, yeah.
Yeah, Dawn of Mana was the one I'm thinking of. The
Which
PS2
one was Heroes?
Game.
It was the crappy RTS. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was whatever, kind of mediocre. But Dawn of Mana was actually an anti-fun game. Like, it had that weird grappling physics element to it.
Yeah.
And it looked so nice, too. I remember playing it at TGS when they first showed it, and I was like, wow, I'm seeing, like, all the elemental spirits in this gorgeous 3D. And then I actually had a chance to play it when it finally came out and was just stunned at how crapular it was.
Sorry, what's the title again?
Oh, Dawn of Mana.
Yeah. Sorry. Lame joke.
Nice.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
I wanted you to say it faster.
Oh, sorry. I actually thought you were having trouble understanding my
No, no, no.
I will say there is an absolutely amazing Fortis soundtrack completely wasted on that game. Like, a beautiful soundtrack. It's like my writing music 50% of the time. I always put it on. So it's like the one good thing about that game. I'm sure it looks good too, but
when I think of studios jumping the shark, I think of LucasArts. And I was trying to think of a moment.
I was wondering when you were going to mention them.
I was trying to think of a specific moment when they jumped the shark. And it may have been when they were making – it may have been when they started making Star Wars games, just because that was when they moved away from their greatest era, which was in the 80s.
Didn't they start making Star Wars games like in the early 90s?
Yeah, they had some amazing Star Wars games.
Rebel Assault.
But in retrospect – that was the beginning of their slow decline. Mm-hmm. And then by 1999, when they started making games like Star Wars Starfighter, Star Wars Pod Racer, Star Wars Yoda Stories, that was kind of like the shark jumping moment for that entire studio.
Well, you had that
culminating
weird
in Star Wars Force Unleashed. Yeah.
You had that weird stretch from like the late 80s to the early – to like the mid 90s where nobody really cared about Star Wars. Like there was no new media. It was like, that's like Transformers or something. That's something we enjoyed from childhood.
I'm speaking as somebody who loved a lot of those Star Wars games and consider some of them my favorite games ever. But there's no denying that eventually LucasArts just became a Star Wars licensed game studio.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of them were pretty bad. I could say Shadows of the Empire might have been the big shark jumping moment for LucasArts.
Rebel Assault. Rebel Assault 2.
You think so?
Yeah. Those games sucked.
They really did.
They were just a
refresh
bag
my memory.
Of ass.
They were like full motion video games that with like a cursor on top.
They
of
were
them,
making
right?
Rebel Assault 2, but they were also making Jedi Knight, which was an amazing FPS. Shadow of the Empire, after Shadow of the Empire, it was kind of all downhill, you know?
What about Jedi Knight 2? What about Jedi Academy?
Jedi Knight 2 was made by Raven, I mean. Yeah. So.
I will say their adventure games were good until 1998, so they at least had that going for them.
What happened in 98?
That was Grim Fandango. Yeah.
Maybe the final nail in the coffin.
I'm not a fan of Monkey Island that came after that.
The final nail in the coffin might have been when they were having the apprentice from Force Unleashed dragging down the Star Destroyer, and then they tried to put that in the actual game, and it was like, oh god, this is such a bad quick time event.
Actually, I'd say the moment, like, they made a lot of really good Star Wars games, but then there was Bombad Racing. Actually, Masters of Taraskasi. That's
oh my gosh, the fighting game.
Yeah.
God. Terrible.
I remember that martial art made it into Star Wars Galaxies, where you could practice to become a Taraskasi master.
Star Wars Galaxies. That's a whole other can of worms, isn't it?
That's just a lot of unfulfilled promises.
Galaxies is the first MMOs. MMO.
Yeah. Yes.
The second MMO is still happening, right?
The Old Republic.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't even know anymore. No one talks about it.
Did BioWare jump the shark when they tried to make Star Wars The Old Republic?
No, I'd say
or was it Jade Empire?
Or Dragon
no.
Age 2.
I was going to say Sonic Chronicles.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, that is –
listen,
we have a winner, Sonic Chronicles.
That game is so overrated. And
my
God. I'm sorry. You're allowed to like it, but I just think it's an overrated game.
That is as big a jump the shark thing as I can ever think of for a studio. Like, I wiped it from my memory. We have a winner. I think we can end the podcast.
Wasn't it called Sonic Chronicles The Dark Brotherhood?
Yes.
Because
BioWare
I think it was
making
supposed
a
to be,
Sonic RPG.
It was going to be the first installment of a new franchise. And so I think it ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, we dodged a bullet and a shark.
A shark bullet.
And with that, we have come full circle.
Yes, yes. So thank you so much, Michael, for joining us and Kat as well. Jeremy, you're stuck here no matter what. So I'm not going to thank you. You're stuck here.
Retronauts has officially jumped the shark.
Yeah. When did Retronauts jump the shark? Let us know. I bet it'll be – I bet all
of you –
probably
the Sonic episode.
No, people are like, it's when Bob Mackie took over. I don't like him.
This is when Jeremy Parrish started hosting.
Wow. So with the first episode then.
Yeah.
So please – actually, please don't let us know that. My ego is fragile, in case you couldn't tell from my Twitter account. So
you can tell us if it was something that involved me.
Aw, don't do that. So let's wrap.
I need a reason to hate myself.
Aw, come on, Jeremy. Let's wrap up the show. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, Twitch, and YouTube as Retronauts. Just find us, subscribe to us. You'll be happy. You'll know what we're doing at all times. And we have so much content outside of the podcast. We do streams. There's things on our YouTube. We'll talk to you on Twitter. We'll be your friends for money. So
yeah, pay me. I'll totally follow you on Twitter.
Remember that, hey, you know what? Penny Arcade, that was one of their tiers on their Kickstarter.
We'll
if you give them
you
money, they'll follow you on Twitter, and then they'll tweet at you once. I'm completely serious. This happened.
Oh, yes.
Wow. I'm doing that for free. I'm a jackass.
Yeah. Come on. It's part of their business plan. So remember, we're also part of US Gamer now that we're slandering the competition. It's important that I bring that up.
Is Penny Arcade our competition?
Not anymore. They don't do games journalism anymore, so we're fine. Also, please keep the reviews coming, you know, in iTunes Music Store. They always help. If you can't even have time for a review, just give us a whatever star rating. I recommend 5 because 5 is a great number. I just like it. You
some
know?
Would say it's the
I
only
thought,
number.
I thought 3 was the magic number.
No, don't listen to those liberals over at Schoolhouse Rock. They'll steer you wrong. So also, I'd like you guys to know that we are funded by Patreon this year for this season, and we love all of you who have given. If you haven't given, please consider giving to us. Even $1 a month will help greatly. And if you can't give, just spread the word about the show. We want more people to listen to us. We like doing this. We want to keep doing it. So if you have any way you can give to us, go to patreon.com/retronauts, and we would definitely appreciate it. And there's all kinds of little rewards you can get if you donate, like stickers, T-shirts, posters, etc. Please check out the site. We'd appreciate it. So contact info. I am Bob Servo on Twitter. You can also follow me on US Gamer. I write for them. I'm senior editor over there, and I write for Something Awful every other week. Check that out, too. Michael, where are you these days?
You can find my weekly video game podcast at vidjagameapocalypse.com. That's V-I-D-J-A Game Apocalypse. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Wikiparaz, P-A-R-A-Z, or VG Apocalypse. I'm also occasionally writing stuff for IGN, so be sure to check there. I've got a Valkyria Chronicles PC review coming up, so keep an eye out for it.
Kat.
Yes, I mostly write for US Gamer with Jeremy, where I crank out lots and lots of Pokemon articles and occasionally Super Robot Tyson articles, so keep an eye out for that. I also contribute to the Press Row podcast, so if you enjoyed listening to me talk about Madden 06 and how horrible it was, well, there's a lot more where that came from. Just check out Operation Sports. I am on there fairly regularly, so you can listen to me talk about sports games. Yeah.
And Jeremy.
And you can find me on the Google.
There's got to be more than one Jeremy Parrish, though.
One R in Parrish.
There's more than one Bob Mackey, and it pisses me off. There's this asshole in Florida who sells real estate.
So there's more than one Jeremy Parrish, but I feel bad for those guys because they have way less SEO than I do. I have SEO clout. I'm really sorry, other Jeremy Parrishes of the world. I'm on Twitter as GameSpite. GameSpite.net is the blog I have. My main task in life is to keep USGamer.net running and then some other stuff.
Cool. And I also want to thank Scott Schrader again for winning the contest and being a great fan. And as far as us, we'll see you next week with a brand new episode. Take it easy, guys.